This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So I posed the whole thing there, Ralph Blumenthal, about what the government might know. So you think there might be a silence group there that has some kind of deep, dark secret?
I'm not so sure. Everything I've seen so far in our reporting is that this information is compartmentalized. It's broken up into bits and pieces. I know it might be comforting to think that there's one person somewhere in the government who is at the center of, you know, this vast spider web of information and knows everything. I do not think that is necessarily true. But it certainly is parceled out in different, as I said, special access programs and different pieces. The CIA has some. The National Reconnaissance Office has others. NASA has others. And it's not necessarily pooled together. So I don't think that there's one person who sits on everything.
It makes me wonder, considering how long that the government and the military have been involved in investigating the UFO phenomena, how much information has been actually lost over the years? You talked about compartmentalization. You know, how much of it has been locked away into cabinets or into warehouses? People have died, and this stuff has been forgotten about.
Well, it's a good question. I don't think the investigation was ever dropped. I mean, after Blue Book closed at the end of 69, that was not the end of it. The CIA and different intelligence agencies continued to compile information for sure. And I don't know whether the information was lost or squirreled away in different places. You know, the CIA did a big document dump a few years ago, revealing, you know, a lot of documents and a lot of information. I think the Roswell stuff is still missing, by the way. So, you know, stuff may exist somewhere. I don't think it's, stuff has been lost necessarily. I mean, you know, I think it's just a question of finding out where it is. We may never open those lock cabinets, but I think they're there somewhere.
I always think here when you talk to Roswell, you think at the final scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they stick the evidence of the Ark of the Covenant inside this warehouse, which I call Warehouse 13, naming it after the Sci-Fi Channel TV show. And therefore, we'll never hear about Roswell again because it's just all been locked away because they couldn't figure out what to do with it.
Well, it would be nice to come up with an archive that has been lost or squirreled away. I think there's still a lot of questions about Roswell. And the longer it's taken, the more, you know, conspiracy surrounds it. So, you know, the government made a mess of things for a long time. And I think the way the government handled things was really at fault. It created an aura of conspiracy that where these, you know, conspiracy theories could flourish. I'm not saying that the government should have or could have let everything out because we were in, you know, a Cold War struggle with adversaries who were looking for the same information. It would be utopian to think that we would let everything out that we found out about these, you know, strange objects or forces. It was a, you know, a research race too, after all. But the way the government handled it and, you know, and enlisted advertising agencies to paint ufologists as communists and, you know, disloyal and or insane, it really is shameful. And what I do like to say is that I think the public here is ahead of the government in that people know what they've seen, thousands and thousands, millions of people know over the years what they've seen, and you know, the government efforts to paint them as mistaken or crazy or so have not worked and only discredited the government.
Going back to that idea of rubber stamping the UFO phenomena as crazy or, you know, just in the realm of nuts. When you first approached the New York Times for the initial story, you and Leslie, was there, I'm sure there was, hesitation on their part to go with a story like this? Because, I mean, in the past, the New York Times, when they have done stories about UFOs, not all the time, but a lot of times the story has been kind of snarky.
That's true. The Times has been snarky, but they've also published some good stories going back to Mantell and when he was chasing a UFO and disappeared. So they have, I think it was an AP story that the Times ran. But to answer your question, no, the Times was not particularly skeptical because Leslie and I, when we sat down with the editor from the Washington Bureau, we met him at the New York Times, and we laid out the information we had. As I said, it was all on the record and with documents. So, you know, the Times, you can't argue with that. And the Times is in the news business. I was in the news business 45 years, so I knew a good story. So when you lay out for an editor as something that happened officially, you know, this was an official Pentagon agency, ATIP, that had come up with videos. We ended up, you know, putting out three of them. There wasn't really anything to argue with.
What about the reaction from your fellow journalists? I mean, you have anybody approach you afterwards and say, I'm really glad you did this. I've been wanting to do something similar, but I just didn't have the guts.
No, we didn't hear that, but Helene, who is actually working in the Washington Bureau, told us she took some grief from her colleagues. Jokey stuff. They would just, you know, start humming weird music when she walked by. But then she told us that she put up the videos that we had gotten showing the objects that Navy pilots had gotten thermal imaging and radar images of these objects, and everybody was dumbfounded. Everybody, you know, gathered around her desk and looked at it. So suddenly they weren't, you know, joking anymore. They were fascinated. And that's, you know, that's the reaction we got from the public. That's the reaction we got from editors. Those videos are among the most watched things I think the New York Times has ever put up. And every time, you know, someone runs a story about UFOs, they use those videos that we put up on the Times website. So to answer your question, yeah, Helene took a little more grief because she worked every day in the Washington Bureau and we weren't going into the office in those days, even though it was pre-pandemic. But I was no longer a regular part of the paper, and Leslie was a freelancer too, so we weren't interacting with colleagues the way Helene was.
All right, now Helene is, as we do this, busier dealing with the possibilities of Russia attacking Ukraine.
Yeah.
And all those issues and ramifications, we would think.
Yeah, what's interesting, though, is that when we followed the story through and, you know, we reported that a lot of these observations were made by the Nimitz carrier group off San Diego in 2004. And then there was another flurry of sightings starting about 2015 and 16 off Virginia, the aircraft carrier group Theodore Roosevelt. Helene had been on the Theodore Roosevelt for another story, so she knew a lot of the people from that. So she brought particular knowledge of that ship and, people who served on it. So that was very helpful.
The videos that you referred to that have received so much play since that time, how do you think that they were released? We're pretty certain that the military over the years has taken other, probably even better, videos of UAPs, yet these managed to get out. How do you think that happened?
Well, I kind of know how it happened, and there was no real mystery.
Let's leave a cliffhanger, folks, and you'll hear the answer of how these got released. More to come with Ralph Blumenthal, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days. You still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast from Sunny Bay.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I'll tell you the voices he comes up with, Ralph. 27 and a half voices he does. There you go. He doesn't do Porky Pig or any of the Mel Blanc ones yet. Okay, Ralph, let's be serious about it here. You were about to continue with the answer about how these photos came to be released, the videos.
Yeah, Lou Elizondo had, we saw the paperwork, had gotten permission to access these videos, I think two first and then a third one, which Leslie ended up seeing, Leslie Kane, when she met with them first in October 2017. We saw the paperwork. Lou Elizondo had gotten official permission to access those videos. And I don't want to talk too much about the process because we never do talk about how we get stuff. They were not classified. They were not stolen. We got them after they were cleared for release. Chris Mellon later came forward to say that he had been a middleman and had gotten them from, you know, Lou Elizondo and gave them to the Times. We haven't commented on that, but they were cleared for release, let's put it that way, and no one else had gotten them, and we got them.
Which makes you wonder, though, why they were cleared for release, because, I mean, the military has always been so tight-lipped when it comes to this subject over the years. I mean, to the point of just right out denying that the phenomena has any present any danger to the United States security. So why these videos?
Yeah, that's a good question. And by the way, these are just a small, these are very much the tip of the iceberg. There are these three videos that we put out on the Times web page are just portions of longer videos, and there are many more videos, we understand, that have not been cleared for release. Other videos have surfaced in different, you know, venues, but you know, why these were allowed out and not others is a good question. And Lou Elizondo was certainly you know, prominent in seeking greater publicity for, you know, for the phenomenon and for getting the story out, and he's committed to that today for more, you know, information. He still adheres to his oath of secrecy when it comes to dealing with classified material. Obviously, he's very uncomfortable talking about certain things when he's interviewed. But I think it was his intention to get these out. And, you know, you're right that for many years the government was holding back, and the Air Force in particular. The Air Force was much slower than the Navy for reasons that are kind of puzzling, because the Air Force, I mean, that's their milieu, is the air, not the Navy. You know, some of these objects have been seen underwater too, which is another question. So maybe the Navy, that's where the Navy operates, on and under the water. But in the air, it should have been the Air Force. But the Air Force has been more reluctant than the Navy to make this public. So the fact that any of it was made public at all is kind of interesting.
Now that this has happened with the emphasis on the Navy, what's the Air Force doing, if anything?
They're lagging behind a little bit, but they put out a new directives saying that now they want, they welcome pilot reports. You know, it used to be that if a pilot reported a UFO, he or she was jeopardizing their career. To be sent to the psychiatrist. And the word quickly spread that this was not a good career move to report, you know, spotting a UFO. And now things have changed, which is quite, you know, welcome news that the Pentagon has officially declared that personnel are supposed to report these things. So that is a big step forward.
You'd think with all this that this would then go to the private scientific community for investigation. Now, of course, we've heard about Project Galileo with Dr. Avi Loeb from Harvard University, but he seems more focused on possible intelligent craft out there, not here.
I've actually talked to Avi Loeb. It's interesting because he, in a way, was John Mack's natural successor at Harvard. I mean, they both were at Harvard. Mack was in psychiatry. Loeb was in astronomy. But Avi Loeb is a different being, magnitude of being than John Mack, in that that Avi Loeb is not so much interested in aliens as John Mack was. He's interested in this objects, and of course the particular object, Oumuamua, that came into our atmosphere in 2017 and then disappeared before anybody knew what it was or what could do anything about it. So Avi Loeb does not want to be, lumped together with the people who are studying aliens. But he is interested in putting this on a strong scientific footing. And I think he's very courageous for that, because he endured his own, backlash at Harvard and elsewhere, like John Mack. Not as bad. I mean, John Mack was put under investigation, which he overcame. Without any, charges, but Avi Loeb, is being very careful to stick to the science.
So now, one thing that's interesting though about Project Galileo, and that is that amongst the people who were involved, Dr. Jacques Vallée, and Vallée is not looking for objects out there. He's very much focused on here on Earth.
Yeah, Jacques Vallée is one of the, real heroes of the ufology field. A very enigmatic person, very learned, and as he himself will admit, somebody who contradicts himself all the time, because he says he's the only UFO expert who doesn't know what they are. So he's honest in that sense, and doesn't pretend to, have an answer. He's as mystified as anybody else. A lot of his early work was in establishing the history of these things going back to, ancient times. So the fact that he has aligned himself with Project Galileo is noteworthy.
I first met Jacques Vallée after he wrote Anatomy of a Phenomenon. There were several of us who visited him in Chicago, and we had an hour or 2 hours to spend with him. This is the 1960s, folks. I'm aging myself again. I've been around forever, but I did not write the very first song or the last one or any song. So that was very interesting. We're talking here, of course, about the Pentagon UFO study and all the ramifications thereof. And very shortly, we're going to get more into Dr. John Mack with Ralph Blumenthal, formerly of the New York Times. And one more thing. Ralph will hang with us for a while for this weekend's episode of After the Paracast, part of the Paracast Plus. For more info, check out theparacast.plus. With Tim Swartz and Gene Steinberg, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Russian forces are now shelling Ukraine. Russia claims that some of the shells fired were from a government-held part of eastern Ukraine and landed on their side of the border. Earlier, separatist leaders ordered a full military mobilization. President Biden and his defense chief are convinced that Russian leader Vladimir Putin has made the decision to invade. Secretary Lloyd Austin in Lithuania.
For months now, Russia has been building up its military forces in and around Ukraine, including in Belarus. They are uncoiling and are now poised to strike.
At a security conference in Munich, Vice President Kamala Harris warned that Russia would face unprecedented financial consequences if it attacks Ukraine. This is USA Radio News. Police have arrested more than 100 protesters involved in the so-called Freedom Convoy demonstrations in the Canadian capital of Ottawa, which officials said turned violent. The convoy protests began in late January and were initially focused on the Canadian government's vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers. But now it's expanded into a broader movement against public health measures to limit the spread of COVID-19. On Friday, police arrested more than 100 people and have had 21 vehicles towed in Ottawa. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act to allow the government to expand measures to end the protests, and pointed out to CNN that some people in the U.S. are funding the protesters. Officials in the U.S. are also concerned about a potential trucker convoy protest ahead of President Biden's State of the Union address on March 1st. According to CNN, you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, Peter Picaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
You see what happened, ladies and gentlemen, is when I started aging myself, Tim got older.
So
Tim, you want to pick up on the questioning?
Well, I was just, and I suppose this is the question on everybody's mind. I mean, what next? Now that the Pentagon is being more open with their UFO investigations, do you think this is something that will continue, or do you think it'll be kind of like in the past that they'll just slowly stop talking about it and hope that everyone forgets?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, it'd be nice if this were linear and we just move on to, you know, greater and greater openness. I mean, it is a little hard to put the genie back in the bottle now. Once the Pentagon has basically confirmed in the UFO report of last year, the UAP report, that these objects exist, you can't go back and say that they don't exist or that they're figments of imagination. You would think the next step would be, well, what if they exist, what are they, where do they come from? And, you know, there are all these other questions. I don't believe that we're on the cusp of so-called disclosure, that the government, suddenly is going to hold a press conference and say we're going to announce everything we know. I think that's utopian. I don't think it's going to happen. That's not the way things work. But, you know, brave people like Lou Elizondo keep pushing things forward. So now, you know, Bill Nelson at NASA has said some interesting things, and there are different people in Congress. They've been briefed, by the way. So it's especially hard to put the genie back in the bottle because people in Congress have been told, again, it's been classified. So we don't know what they've been told. But we did a story in the New York Times saying that they were briefed. Different congressional committees were briefed on possible material recoveries from crashed vehicles. So, you know, we know that they know stuff.
It's interesting here, too. We have Senator Gillibrand, we have Senator Rubio, and we have the gentleman, a congressman here on the adjacent district to mine here in Arizona, Gallego, that they sign on to this thing, and I think, what is the constituency for having a positive measure in a Pentagon budget to investigate UFOs?
Well, you know, people want to know. I mean, people are curious, and they don't want to be called crazy for what they've seen. So I think there's, you know, increasing interest. We know the stories are very well read. The Times piece of 2017 and subsequent pieces got huge readership. And, you know, it's one of the things that's always, and it's, you know, it, obviously it's a big component of entertainment. It's in, you know, it's all the movies, Don't Look Up. That was an asteroid, not a UFO, but, so the public is interested. So that's probably the constituency.
Well, certainly we can have Marco Rubio running as president, which is, of course, one of his ambitions, and say, I'm the guy who's bringing the truth about UFOs to the public.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of attention with that. Of course, nobody, you know, no one is putting out a lot of information, which is because they don't have it or they can't say it if it's classified. So we're kind of, you know, running around in circles. There's not much new information that's coming out because it's so closely held. And, you know, so we'll have to wait for the next sort of breakthrough.
Also, I have to wonder here, if they feel, and this is something which is not 100%, if they feel that UFOs, at least some of them, have an off-world origin, how do you prepare the people for something like that?
Yeah, I know that's a big concern. I happen to think that the people are better prepared for that than the government seems to fear. Because, as I said, people have been encountering these things for a long, long time, and they know they're not figments of imagination. And you know, if you believe John Mack's research, there have been some polls that have been questioned or questionable that put the number of people who've had alien encounters or, you know, those kind of abduction type encounters in the hundreds of thousands, if not the millions. So, you know, it's very hard to quantify, but a lot of people have had strange experiences. So I sometimes think that people are more ready for this than the government, you know, seems to think.
I'd read a survey a couple of years ago talking about that very subject on how people would react if it was revealed that there was extraterrestrial intelligence out there in the universe. And the survey found that the general public would accept it fine. The various religious groups wouldn't have a problem with it, but it would be scientists that would have the most adverse reaction to information like that.
Well, that's very astute. I mean, first of all, religion, the Vatican has been in, you know, I wouldn't say the forefront, but has been up there with UFO curiosity. You would think, or maybe some people would think, that the church would be adamantly opposed, you know, to any discussion like this. But actually, there have been ufologists at the Vatican Observatory who've been very, you know, intrigued by all these accounts. Some of them met with John Mack. And, you know, I mean, if the history of religion has been strange sightings and manifestations of, you know, spiritual beings on Earth, then it shouldn't be too surprising that they're intrigued by these sightings. Either way, they have been open and interested in it. The science, you're absolutely right, had been very hostile. Hostile is probably the right word. And some people who fancy themselves as scientists have been really adamant in not even. Yeah, that as scientists have been notable for not being open to you know, entertaining some of these accounts that come anecdotally and in some cases through scientific measurement, like the radar tracks of you know, the Navy, because you know, they think it's somehow unscientific to entertain this possibility. But, you know, there's a long history of scientists being closed-minded when something outside the usual frame of reference appears. And that didn't start with UFOs. That goes way back to earliest days of science. And scientists themselves have noted that and quarreled about it and taken issue with fellow scientists who have been closed-minded because they adopt an orthodoxy that is contrary to their sworn interest in entertaining new possibilities. So it's fine to be skeptical, but when evidence presents itself, they need to go with it.
Not to be crass, but do you think if there were more grants to do UFO research, some of these scientists wouldn't take them up on it?
Well, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy because there's no money for it. No one does it, and they don't do it because there's no money in it. So maybe if more money was made available, you know, I say this at the end of my book, The Believer. I talk about the billions and billions of dollars that is thrown into scientific research, telescopes and space stations and the Giant Hadron Collider, all worthy, eminently worthy scientific enterprises looking for, you know, the hidden nature of matter and, you know, what's out there, you know, in millions of light years away in the black holes and what is a black hole. That's fine. I mean, it's certainly worth, all the billions of dollars that are being studied. But along with that, there's some other things like what have been the effects on people who've encountered UFOs?
Let's do our break here, Ralph, and we have more to come. And we're beginning, at least at the edges, to talk about The Believer with Gene and Tim and Ralph. You're in
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hi, I'm Al Averroa, founder of Knight Strategic Wealth. Inflation is picking up, markets are volatile, and the dream of a comfortable retirement is harder to attain than ever before. Nobody wants to run out of money in retirement. That's why I'm going to share something that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. With our investment strategy, when the stock market goes up, you earn a market-linked return that locks in every year. And when the stock market goes down, your investments won't lose a dime. There are no unnecessary fees, and it works for your investments, money at a brokerage firm, or even money at a bank. It's simple, it's safe, and that's why savvy investors work with us. Want to learn more? Text FREE to 833-898-0500 and we'll send our retirement readiness kit directly to your phone right now. If you want to help build a retirement portfolio that will go up with the market and never lose money, get our retirement readiness kit today and see how this strategy can help secure your future. Text FREE to 833-898-0500. Text FREE to 833-898-0500.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. and I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who've helped people that have been injured or wronged. Have you been diagnosed with cancer? Are you one of the millions who have taken Zantac or other generic versions of this popular drug to help treat stomach issues? Then pay close attention to this message. The FDA said it detected low levels of a probable cancer-causing chemical known as NDMA in Zantac and other generic forms of this popular drug. They've banned sales and even removed it from the market. If you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've taken Zantac or a generic equivalent, call the legal helpline now. You could receive a free cash award and have your medical expenses covered. And there's no upfront cost to you. They only get paid if you win. So please call now. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. That's 800-998-7173.
Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Ralph Blumenthal, former New York Times journalist, one of the people involved in those really special articles beginning in late 2017 on the existence of a Pentagon UAP program. And he's going to also be joining us on After the Paracast after this episode ends. He's author of a new book here called The Believer. That's about John Mack. Now, obviously, having read the book from John Mack in the early 2000s, you got hooked kind of there. But let's talk about John Mack. How does a Harvard psychiatrist start looking into UFO abductions?
Yeah, good question. Well, it's quite a story that I trace in The Believer. He began as a very conventional psychiatrist and somebody who was very committed to earthly causes like a nuclear disarmament, like bringing mental health services to the poor. He also wrote a book that ended up winning the Pulitzer Prize, a biography of Lawrence of Arabia, T.E. Lawrence. So he was very, you know, focused on down-to-earth issues, but little by little he became aware that there was something else going on out there, something interesting. And he went out to Esalen, that, you know, think tank, that psychic think tank on the Pacific, in the late 80s, and he got into something called holotropic breathing, where he found he could enter advanced states of consciousness by controlling his breathing. This was developed by a Czech psychiatrist named Stan Grof. And he accessed different parts of his psyche that he really wasn't aware of. For example, his mother died when he was 8.5 months old, John Mack. She died of appendicitis. And he was always mourning his, you know, her loss. I mean, he was a child, so he always knew he missed his mother. But it became a real issue in his life later. And through this holotropic breathing, he felt himself back in the womb, and he felt himself being born, and he connected with his dead mother. And so he had this sense that there was something else going on that he couldn't quite understand, a spiritual dimension to existence. So it was preparing him for something else. And then he heard about a guy named Bud Hopkins, who was an artist who had done some of the first research into people who had alien encounter experiences. And at first, John Mack was dismissive, and he said, this is crazy stuff. And he didn't want to be associated with it, but he met Bud Hopkins, and he saw the letters that people had written Bud Hopkins about experiences they'd had, and then John Mack started meeting some of these people himself, and he could not explain what they had encountered, and that's what started him off. That's the beginning of the story.
Should tell our listeners, if you go back to our archives from 2010 and 2009, you'll see four interviews where Bud Hopkins was present. So we knew Bud Hopkins for a number of years. And we had him on towards the end of his life. And so we got a good summary of where he'd come from. Okay. Now, the first we heard about possible UFO abductions before Bud Hopkins, of course, and later on Dr. David Jacobs, was with Barney and Betty Hill.
Yeah, I tell that story in The Believer because that was the really the first well-publicized abduction story account, and it broke in 1965, about 4 years after it had actually happened, because Barney and Betty Hill didn't talk about it right away, not publicly. They mentioned to a close circle, but the story really never got out. And basically, they had been driving home from a belated honeymoon trip to Canada, and driving through the White Mountains of New Hampshire, they spotted an object, a craft, and the car stalled, and they then later recaptured all these experiences of being taken by beings and subjected to various experiments on a craft, and then being let go. And they consulted a psychiatrist, and the story sort of came out in hypnosis, but sometimes through conscious recollection. So that was a story that came out in the 60s, and it was a sensation. There was a book written about it. There was a movie. And so that was the first – that's when alien abduction sort of entered the discourse.
Well, I know it was very political at the time because – Major Kehoe's organization, NICAP, was right. Very reluctant to talk about possible cases involving contact with aliens, whereas the other big organization of the time, APRO, was interested. In fact, I remember an article in one of the other UFO magazines at the time, how close will Major Kehoe let a UFO get? Well, obviously, with the Hills, he let it come very close.
If he had anything to say about it. Well, that put the story into a new dimension. I mean, there had been accounts of, first of all, there had been sightings of UFOs going back to antiquity, as Jacques Vallée documented. And then there had been also accounts of encounters with alien beings over the years, you know, well before Betty and Barney Hill in the 60s. But they didn't get a lot of attention, and they were obviously not well documented, because they never are, which is kind of a hallmark of the phenomenon. It's really interesting that it doesn't get well documented. But anyway, that was the new development in the 60s, and that's what John Mack stumbled across when he met Bud Hopkins. And what made Mack's involvement noteworthy is that he was a noted psychiatrist who'd won a Pulitzer Prize writing about Lawrence of Arabia, and he had real standing. He was a Harvard professor. And, you know, nobody could accuse him of being ignorant. He'd written a book on nightmares, actually, so that when people said, oh, you know, you don't understand, these people are just having a nightmare, he could say, listen, I know nightmares. I've written a book about nightmares, and these encounters don't only happen at night. They happen in broad daylight. So he really elevated this issue to, you know, to a new dimension or a new credibility.
When John first approached the subject of experiencers, was he under the impression that this was purely a psychological situation, you know, possibly an uncategorized neurosis that really needs to be seriously looked into?
Yeah, that was certainly his first impression when he first heard about Bud Hopkins. He thought these people were just crazy, simply crazy. And to his amazement, when he started seeing them professionally himself, he realized very quickly that they were well-functioning people in every other way, except for this extraordinary experience. So that's what stumped him. And then, of course, he started interviewing some children, some as young as, you know, two. And they were telling stories, you know, as children would tell in a very childish way, of going up in the sky with being taken up in craft. I mean, they told it in ways that a child would say it, but he realized these children were not recounting books that they had read or movies they had seen. This was some real experience to them. So that really struck him. And then he came up with, you know, some fragmentary evidence, like the scars that people were talking about that they didn't remember having before they had encounters. And then in some cases, there were even some fragmentary third-party corroborations of people missing when they remembered having these encounters. So all these things convinced him that there was something going on that he couldn't explain.
Now, did you ever look at, in terms of background material, the folklore going back to earlier centuries where people supposedly got in touch with other beings? Because sometimes people relate the UFO abduction scenario to that.
Oh, yeah, there's a rich history in folklore of these stories of, you know, the shape-shifting of the Navajos that came up with the Skinwalker Ranch story when Robert Bigelow bought this ranch in Utah that had been the subject of a lot of Indian tales of strange paranormal events. So there was a rich history of what you'd call alien encounters that weren't always called that.
We've got more to come with Ralph and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.